It's a Mesereau Monday. Gary Pattengale here on Mesereau Monday, talking about taxes and all that great stuff. Last week was about things to do before April 15th. Today, we want to chat about where taxpayers can slip up. I don't even know what safe harbor rules are, but I see this in your note. Explain to me estimated tax and safe harbor rules and where I can mess up.
Yeah, so
explain it like I'm 10 years old.
All right, sounds good. So the IRS safe harbor rule, basically what it says is that if you pay a 100% of last year's tax liability or 110% if you make a higher income level, it's $150,000 if you're married, you can generally avoid underpayment penalties or if you pay 90% of the current year tax liability.
So if you get really close to paying the amount, they're not going to charge you extra for missing it.
They may.
Okay.
Want their money. So, the rule is what it is. So, I think coming close might, disqualify you from, meeting the safe harbor. But if you miss that threshold, penalties can't apply. And in the past, when interest rates were super low, and they're still pretty high now, penalties, they can cost something now.
Mm-hmm.
So, you want to try to avoid that.
How do you avoid it?
Well, so making estimated payments is one way. The IRS is very strict on when you make those payments too. So here's what's interesting. I've seen several instances where a taxpayer actually got a refund but still was paid penalties throughout the year because the penalties are calculated quarterly. So the IRS wants their tax money when the income was realized.
Pay as you go.
Exactly. So if you had income that got generated in January, for example, but you didn't make an estimated payment until December, you could get penalized for that, even if you overpaid the amount of tax that was due. So that can happen. But one thing that can avoid penalties is tax withholding. The IRS treats withholding on certain income items as being paid throughout the year. So that can help your situation too. But when it comes to estimated payments, if you got a tax event like a capital gain, you take money out of an IRA or something like that, you got a big bonus. I've seen it with executives with restricted stock. The withholding might not be enough, so you want to make sure that you make the payment when the income is incurred.
I see. So you can't just say, oh, I owed 10 last year. I'm going to make $2,500 quarterly payments. If a lot of your chunk comes in December or comes in March, you need to distribute that more appropriately based on when the money's actually coming in.
Yep, that's exactly right. Otherwise, you might get penalized.
A lot of Roth errors can happen, especially if you're doing a backdoor, right?
Yeah, that's pretty common. So, just real briefly, so backdoor Roth, basically you're putting money into a traditional IRA, you're converting it immediately to a Roth, and you're looking to avoid income tax because it's non-deductible, and it circumvents the income limits for adding to a Roth, right? So that's why people do that. It's one of the most misunderstood areas for tax planning, and the IRS has what's called a pro rata rule, which means that if you have any pre-tax money in a traditional SEP or simple IRA, you can't just convert the after-tax portion tax-free. They aggregate all your IRAs, and they force a proportionate calculation. So if you have both pre-tax and after-tax dollars sitting in an IRA and you make a conversion, part of that's going to be taxable, and I think a lot of people don't realize that.
So, right.
You got to make sure that if you're going to do this, you've got the right mix of assets to take advantage of it.
That's a professional needs. I can't do on my own. I understand most of what you said, and I've heard that many times before. That's still an issue. And you got a form, that 8606, right? It's important too.
Yeah, you want to do that. This is pretty technical, but it's a form that basically tracks the non-deductible contributions to your IRA, your after-tax basis. It's actually required. It's advantageous to you to file it because you want to make sure that you don't pay tax on something that wasn't deductible in the first place. But if you don't file it, you can't incur penalties. And more importantly, the IRS has no record of your basis, as I mentioned, so you can lead to paying taxes twice on the same dollars. So if the only issue that you have is a missing 8606, you may not have to file an amendment. You can just file that as a standalone document, but you got to talk to your CPA.
I have chatted with your colleague about tax loss harvesting in the past, and obviously the markets have been doing really well lately, so there's not a ton of that going on, but
right.
There are losers out there, not people. I mean, there are, but there's also tax losses. Yeah, everyone has a stock that hasn't done great, right, if you own a few of them. Anyways, there's a way to do it and a way not to do it, and you can make a lot of mistakes if you think you're going to sell out of a S&P 500 ETF and then I'm going to buy into a Dow Jones. I mean, like, it seems easy enough, but without a professional kind of holding your hand, you can really mess that stuff up, can't you?
You can, yeah. So This is all reported in the 1099s now if they're covered securities. So anything that's after 2011 would be reported straight to the IRS, but it's on a per account basis. So you can't just look at the accounts in isolation. You got to review all the 1099s collectively across all accounts. One thing, a big no-no, you can't sell something at a loss and then buy it in an IRA and expect to take the loss. That's that will violate the wash sale, even though it won't necessarily show up on the 1099. If you buy something that isn't substantially different than what you sold, you can also trigger a wash sale. So, for example, if you sold, like you said, an S&P 500 fund and you bought an S&P 500 mutual fund
right.
from another company, that's not going to work.
It's not going to work.
No. And, it burdens on the taxpayer. So if you try to do something like selling one index and buying a very similar index that tracks the same area, you could get challenged. That's always possible. And then I've seen situations where, you know, somebody's trying to sell a certain tax lot. So not the whole position, but a part of it. Like, you know, some of it's at a loss, but the rest of the position's at gains. You got to be really careful and make sure that you identify what lot you're selling.
Yes.
Because if you don't do that, it's going to go on the 1099, and now the burden's on you to say, hey, I meant to sell this lot, not the one that you're showing on my tax form.
Yeah, so, sometimes it's like defaulted to last one bought, first one sold, if you don't go in and go, no, I want to sell this particular one because this is a loss.
Yep, that's exactly right. So if that happens, you can file Form 8949, which – you know, you can report a different basis than what the IRS is reporting, and you can try to do it that way. But most CPAs are just going to take the 1099
yeah.
as it stands and report it the way it
is. The reason I know that is because I've made that mistake, Gary. That's how I know that. I'm not a smart guy. I have sold the wrong lots before and gone, oh, that's a bummer. Yeah. Cool. As a S-Corp business owner with an employee of one, as I talk about, it's amazing how much bookkeeping I still have to do on myself.
Right.
And reporting I have to do. Luckily, I have a program that does most of that for me and help along the way. But even I am missed deductions. You don't file the mileage. I mean, that's huge. I mean, there's a lot of different things in there. But you have to be careful on how you do it and who's an employee versus an owner. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts there, isn't there?
Yeah, there really is. I mean, so, you know, probably the first thing business owners can do, you see it a lot, surprisingly, but it's keeping your business expenses separate from your personal expenses. So yep. having clean books and records, that's really important, because if you ever do get challenged, you know, again, the burden's on you to convince the IRS that you did it this way and hope that it's correct. So keeping it clean is very important. I've seen missing, you know, car mileage deductions, forgetting self-employed health insurance deductions or deductions for employees. That happens a lot. So you really want to keep track of that, have good books, and make sure that you're not missing opportunities. You know, we mentioned before the S-Corp compensation, reasonable compensation. That's important. You know,
yeah.
you don't want to get challenged on that. And another really common error that happens all the time, I actually had a situation not that long ago. It's missing retirement contribution deadlines. So there's a set point in time when you got to make certain contributions for either yourself, as you mentioned earlier, or for the employer contributions. You miss that, it can be very challenging to try to make that up if you can at all.
Yeah. And really keeping the business checking account and the personal checking account separate. If there's any crossover, it's well documented and really you should be avoiding it at all costs. But well, that's what I've gotten the advice is just like note everything, have a reason, have the flow, make sense to people so that if you ever get called, you go, no, here, this is the explanation. And hopefully they're buying what you're selling. Okay, that's it for we today. We're going to do one more episode next week to wrap up March. 1-877-MESRO, MESIROW.com.